Latter-day Saint Home Educators is pleased to bring you this audio presentation, recorded live during the July 2016 Youth Education Conference, held at Utah State University.
Great, I'm so excited to be here with you guys, and feel free to stop me while I'm talking. If you have a question, raise your hand. Otherwise, we'll just do questions afterwards. But when I was a little girl, when I was 6 years old, my mom brought me home a couple of cassette tapes because we didn't have CDs back then. And it was of church music, so there was like a cassette tape of primary music and a cassette tape of some Janis Cat Perry or something. And I put those cassette tapes in and sat on my little bed and listened to it. And I was, like, overwhelmed with music and knew since I was 6 years old that that's what I wanted to do. And so we lived in California, way out in the middle of nowhere. Our nearest neighbor was a mile away. So I begged my parents to take piano lessons, and they said it was too far away. I finally convinced them that our piano teacher was 45 minutes away. I got to take piano lessons for 6 months, and then my parents had me quit because they couldn't drive anymore. So I would just sit there at the piano and try to teach myself at 6 years old. And then when I was old enough to drive, when I was 16, I drove myself to voice lessons and piano lessons. And when I was in high school, I would fill notebooks with lyric ideas. I had a hard time ever finishing a song, but I had lots of ideas. But I was really shy and wasn't very confident in myself. And so, like, I never got the parts in the plays, the musicals and things like that. And kind of knew that this is what I wanted to do and wanted to share my music with the world. But it didn't seem like it would ever happen. But I kept believing in it and kept working hard. And I went to BYU, and I was a music major for a semester, and it's a really competitive program. It was making me not like music. It's a really great program and really great teachers there, but it wasn't working for me. And so I switched my major to English because I love to read and I love to write as well. And I majored in English, and after I graduated from BYU, I realized that if I really wanted to go out and share my music, then I needed to actually work at it and do it. So I made an album, and I went out there and started doing it, and it was a long road. So you guys know, like, you hear of a new music artist, and you're like, oh, look at this new music artist. Odds are they're probably not new. They've probably been doing it for years and years and years and years until they finally, like, started to get known. So I did... I released my first albums. It wasn't until 7 years later that even one of the albums even broke even. But then fast forward another 7 years and sold 1 million albums. And had just an incredible experiences traveling the world and speaking and amazing things. But if you looked at me in high school, like, my friends or people that knew me in high school are like, what are you doing? Like, they're so surprised. So you always just have to, you know, believe in yourself, and when you have a passion for something, keep working at it. It takes a lot of hard work, a lot, sometimes a lot of time as well, and a lot of patience. So that's kind of my story of how I started with music. How many of you here are into music? Raise your hand if you're into music. So most of you here, cool. Okay, so, but that's just kind of my story with music. That wasn't 15 minutes, but maybe we'll just open it up to questions at this point. So, yeah.
What was your biggest personal stumbling block?
My biggest personal stumbling block? That's a great question. It was probably, I just have a few of them, so I'm trying to think of which my biggest one was. At first, it changed kind of along the way. So at first, it probably was just having confidence in what I did, because I would not share my music with anybody. Like I said, the people in high school are like, what are you doing? Because they had no idea that I wrote music, even though I did it every day. Like, nobody knew that I did it. And so it was having confidence. And when I was in college and I was playing it at the piano once, and my roommate came in and she was like, "What song is that?" And I'm like, "Oh, I wrote it." And she's like, "You write music?" We'd been roommates for like a year. I'm like, "Yeah." And she's like, "What?" So then someone else comes in. She's like, "Play it for them." I'm like, "No." And she's like, she made me play it for him, and I played it for him. And she's like, "We're going to the studio. You're going to record this." And she was a really great influence. But I kind of had to get over that like confidence. And when I first started performing, do you guys get nervous when you perform? No? You do? Raise your hand if you get nervous when you perform. Like, okay. Yeah, okay. Okay, so I used to get nervous too. Like, you get the butterflies and you're like, your voice is like shaking and you're like, man, and you're like, why in the world did I ever want to do this, you know? And so that happened at first, but I got over that. And I just have to tell you, by the way, like, one of the most nerve-wracking things that I did, do you guys know Good Things Utah? So it's a morning show, and I went on TV to sing, and it was my first time on TV, and I go out to the set, and it's live, so they have a TV screen there that's showing the live, and they're at commercials, right, and it's like showing how much time until the show goes on, and they had brought me in there and said, okay, you're next, you're going to, right when we come out of commercial, you're going to be on. I'm like, okay. So they sit me there, and I'm all alone, and I'm going, 60 seconds, like, I'm on in 60 seconds. There's nobody there on the set. Like, the Good Things Utah ladies aren't there and stuff. And I'm like, help, help, somebody. You're going to be on live TV and there's going to be nobody there. I was like, I was really nervous. And then it gets down to 10 seconds. There's nobody there. And seriously, literally 6 seconds before, it's like 6, 5. The cameraman's going 6, 5. I'm like, there's nobody there. The ladies come in, just they come in like this and they sit down. Look at the camera and like start going, and I was like, oh man. And then I thought, and then they're like pushing me on there, and you can see like my music starts and I go to sing, and they have a close-up of my lips, like my lips, and they're like trembling, and I'm like, I am on live TV. I seriously almost just bolted. I was like, this is the worst thing I've ever had to do in my life. But then after I had done TV and radio, like live stuff a couple times, it started getting a little bit easier and stuff. So that was one of my stumbling blocks. Another stumbling block is sometimes you come across logistical things like money. So I did my first CD. How much money do you think it costs to do a CD? Depends on how you do it, but my CDs, since I don't really arrange my own music, I just write it, but I don't arrange the instruments and play them all and stuff, was like $15,000 to $20,000. And so I had done my first CD, and it didn't do very well. It wasn't very good, actually, at all. I hope none of you ever listened to it. but you probably can't find it. And I did my first CD, and it didn't do well at all. I had it in a few stores, and it didn't do great. And we had to come up with money to do a second CD, and that's a lot of money. In the meantime, I had gotten married. So I got married 3 months, So I was getting married 3 months after my first CD was going to go into stores. And so Excel Entertainment picked up the CD and said, we'll put it in stores for you. And so I had to redo the CDs because it had a barcode on it. And they're like, well, you're getting married. Do you want to go with, my maiden name was Jenny Harris. They said, do you want to go with Jenny Harris or what your name will be? And it was going to come out 3 months before I was supposed to get married. And I'm like, well, I went with Jenny Phillips, and luckily my husband still decided to marry me. Otherwise, I would have always had a name that I never had. So I actually went out as Jenny Phillips before I was even married. But I'm glad I did that now, because they're kind of like, you kind of have to stay with what name you choose. And so we did that. But it came out, didn't do very good. We're married and had just had a baby, and needed to come up with this other money. And my incredible husband, that's the thing, if you want to do a musical thing in life, you need to have a supportive spouse. But he was working at the MTC and going to school, getting his master's degree, and he got a second job for like 8 months from 4 to 8 in the morning cleaning bathrooms at the Bean Museum at BYU, and gave every single penny of that for me to do a second album. And then my dad actually built a little tiny little studio basement apartment in their house, and we went and lived in there for 10 months to save the rest of the money that we needed to do the CD. When I graduated from high school, my brother graduated from college the same year, and my other brother was graduating from high school. So our parents bought us all brand new SUVs, which they'd never done anything like that before, ever, or given us anything like that. We paid for college. We did, you know, everything, and so they brought us that. I sold it and got a clunker car and spent that money on a CD. So it's kind of crazy, and it just takes a lot of dedication, a lot of sacrifice sometimes for things. So, okay, she has a question over here in the yellow. Yeah.
What?
Yeah, go ahead.
Question is, I don't get how to make the album process works.
Yeah, so how many of you have ever recorded?
I did one.
Yeah, like
Yeah, besides for on your iPhone. How many of you want to record? Yeah, okay, cool. So let me tell you a little bit about the process. It's changed a lot, and it will continue to change. So if you really know what you're doing, and you've kind of practiced your, studied and learned a lot about sound recording, you can do recording in your own basement now. The technology has gotten so good that you can do a lot of it, like, in your basement. I can't. You have to really be, like, a tech person, and the technology is kind of expensive. So most people will go to a studio, and they'll record. So how the recording process works is you'll record your, like, bass instrument first, like your piano or your guitar. If it's piano or guitar-based, you'll record that. You'll have your other instrument players come in. Sometimes you can record them all on separate tracks at different times. Some studios will have different isolation booths, where you'll have your guitar player in one and your drummer in one or whatever, and you're all different, and you're doing it at the same time and kind of just creating it as you go. So you can do it that way. How I do it is we have, you know, the piano come, we have the orchestra come, we have the the solo woodwind come. They all come separately. Yeah, and so that's why it's expensive. It's expensive to do it that way. Most songwriters, are any of you songwriters? Raise your hand if you're a songwriter.
I don't
know. No songwriters. Okay, singers? Raise your hand. Okay. So I won't go into the songwriting then, but then you record. So there's a lot of singers here, let me kind of explain how you do a recording session for singing. There's two ways you can do it. So one way is called punching in and punching out, and one way is called comping. So when you're punching in and punching out, like when you hear a song on the radio, it's never just like one take through. Like they didn't just sing that whole thing ever. Maybe sometimes, but hardly ever. So what they'll do, if punching in and out is not very common, it's mainly comping, but punching in and out is you can sing the whole thing through and then listen to it and you're like, oh, I didn't like that line. So you'll sing it over again. So you'll be in and you'll hear the music on your headphones and you sing along, you hear yourself sing, and you sing so that you're on the right level and tone and everything as you were on the previous take. You sing along with it for a measure or two, and then you record just that line, and then they punch you out again, the recording out, so you just recorded just that line, if that makes sense. And you can go through all the parts that you didn't like and do that. The reason that people will use that method is because it's a lot faster than comping. So if you don't have a lot of money, then you can do it that way. So comping, what you do is you go in and you sing through the whole song like 5 or 6 times. Some people do it 30 or 40 times, but most people will do it 5 to 8 times. You record the whole song through, and then you listen to every single phrase. Like, give said the little stream, give said the little stream, give said the little stream, give said the little stream. And you decide which one of the 8 takes or 6 takes is the best. And then they put it up in a comp track. And then you listen to the next one, and they put it, and that's how almost all recording is done. And it takes a while, but you're getting the very best line from everyone. And then the engineer will go in and he fixes the breaths, or he'll scoot it over a little bit or whatever if you held one note a little bit long, so you have to start a little later or whatever. They go in and they like fix all that, and then they will tune it. So if you like a take that's like, oh, that was really good, but it was just a little bit flat, then they'll just tune it a little bit so it's not flat anymore. So they'll go in. That editing process and the mixing process takes about 3 hours to do. So if the studio is like $80 an hour, then that's like $240 just for the editing and mixing part of the recording. So did I answer your question fully, or did you have more questions about that?
I'm trying to think. Oh, wait, I remember now. The songwriting part is really complicated. I can't
tell you. Yeah, how many of you have ever tried songwriting? So some of you have kind of tried. It's hard, right? It can be a hard process. So what was your question? Does it go along with this?
I was going to say, what were some of your like, most successful moments, maybe?
Yeah, some of my... Okay, I'll do that. How many of you are interested in learning about songwriting, like how to get jump-started on it? We have some people. Okay, let me go on that, and then we'll talk about the successful moments. I like that question. People will ask me, some of their most common questions they'll ask me is, what do you come up with first, lyrics or music? And I almost always come up with lyrics. Some people come up with music. There's not a right or wrong way with that. But what you have to do as a songwriter, like, you know a real songwriter. Do you guys know Sherry Call at all? She's a songwriter. Anyway, she was saying, like, once her boyfriend was breaking up with her, and he said something, and she's like, oh, that makes me think of, like, ooh, that would be a good line for a song. And she's, like, writing it down and stuff, and she's, like, breaking up with her boyfriend. But that's how it is, like, when I'm at church and I'll hear somebody or general conference, I'm like, oh, that phrase would make such a good song. And I'm, like, in church, like, on the back of my program, like, trying to write because my husband's looking at me like, you know, I'm like, oh, I just need to write down this line. Like, you just got to learn to have what I call, like, those aha moments. So when somebody says something, this, I think the hardest thing about a song is, like, the first hardest thing is coming up with an idea. Like, how do you come up with a great idea? And it, for me, if I can come up with something that's, like, really hits me, like somebody really says something that's like, yeah, write it down, and you can start forming that into a song. So, by the way, you can write lyrics and get together with somebody that does music and collaborate and co-write. Or if you just do music, you can get someone together with the lyrics. So you don't have to do both pieces of it. But you really want, just like my top songwriting tips in a nutshell, one of the biggest problems with beginning songwriters is they're trying to write too much. You're like, if I'm going to write a church song and I'm going to write about faith, there is so many things that you could say about faith, so much. And usually songs end up being so general or cliche. You're using cliche things like, you know, walking in the dark and whatever. Like, what are you really trying to say about faith? So, like, I wrote one of my most popular songs that it was on an EFY album. It's called Live Like You Believe. It's that's like one aspect of faith. Like, if you have faith, you're living like you believe. And the whole song is just on that, like, live like you believe. So a good test is you ask yourself when someone says, like, what is your song about? You have conversations with yourself. What is your song about? And if you can't explain it in a sentence, like if you're saying, well, it's about living like you believe. Oh, that's a cool concept, right? But if you're like, well, it's about having faith. If it doesn't really catch you, you know, then it's not probably going to be an interesting song. So you really want to have a specific thing that you're saying and have everything in the song. So when I do a songwriting classes, like, we'll look at lyrics, the beginning lyrics, and you can look at, like, almost every line is, like, saying something different. Well, this is about the atonement. This is about forgiveness. This is about trust. This is about, you know, and so it's like you're hearing it so fast as you're going that if you're just saying all this stuff, it doesn't really hit them. So you really just want to be focusing on everything leading up to what it is you're trying to say and stay focused on one principle. So there's so much. I could do hours on songwriting. So if you have any other specific questions about songwriting, go ahead and ask those. But this guy in the back had a question about some of my most successful moments. So I'll go back to some of those. But I have to say, like, there was a day when I mean, I worked and worked and worked and worked and wasn't finding success or anything for so long. And I finally started getting success and then being, like, number one seller. And like I said, selling a million CDs, which is not something, I think it's maybe happened once or twice in the LDS music industry with other artists. And I remember one day, I mean, like, all of my dreams being on EFY and traveling the world have, like, come true. And I had done all of this stuff. And I remember one day I had just gotten a phone call that told me that I had won Female Artist of the Year for this award. And it's like this big award, and they only choose one a year. So Female Recording Artist of the Year. And I just got off the phone, and I was like, wow, that's so cool. And then I was watching my little two-year-old boy, and I can't even remember what he did, but he did something. Like, he said something he'd never said before. And I all of a sudden realized that, like, being a mom and having that little boy and stuff, in just that one moment of him saying something, was so much more fulfilling to me than any kind of success I had ever achieved with my music. And in the end, like, being at the top, because a lot of times we don't realize it because we're, like, working, like, oh, I'm going to be successful, I'm going to do this, and we don't realize it. But when I finally got to the top and had, like, achieved everything that I'd really wanted to, I realized it's totally empty unless what you're doing is to, like, help other people. And that's all that has really meant anything to me. I mean, it's fun. It's, like, was fun for 2 days to get Female Recording Artist of the Year. It was cool. But then it was over. And it was over. Like, it, you know. And I learned. And luckily, as I had been going on my music, I really tried to stay focused on that so I didn't have, like, regrets. I hadn't, like, neglected my family to get where I wanted to do. And I had tried to stay focused on helping other people. And so it was fulfilling to me, and I felt like my music had been a success. But as far as, like, numbers of how many albums you've sold, or even getting to sing on an EFY CD, like, that's cool. You know, it's cool, but it really doesn't mean a lot in life. And I think sometimes we can get so caught up in those things, like, oh, if I could just have a CD with my picture on it, or if I could just get recording on an EFY album or something, then I would be happy. It would make me so happy. And it will be thrilling and exciting for a little bit, but there's really no lasting happiness. Does that make sense? Am I making sense in, like, what I'm saying? So some of my successes more come in, like, this is a really, like, what I consider to be super, one of my biggest success stories was I got an email from a young man. Okay, young women usually like my music a lot more than young men like my music, so. And he said that he went to a youth conference. He was totally inactive. And he was dragged along by his friends. He didn't want to be there. He said, I didn't even have a good experience. I wasn't open to the Spirit, so I didn't even feel the Spirit. And when we were leaving, they handed us all a CD as we're walking out the door, and it was my Arise and Shine 4 CD. It had a picture of a girl on the cover. And he said he looked at the CD, and he's like, what is this stupid thing? It's got a picture of a young woman. This is young woman music. I don't even want this thing. So he got in his truck, and he threw it in his glove box because he didn't want anyone to see it. And then he forgot that it was there. And he was making bad decisions in his life, and he was the star of the football team, and said he was dating the cutest girl in the school, like the head cheerleader girl, and he had made some mistakes and had gotten himself in trouble, and he still wasn't going to church and didn't have any relationship with God. And he said one day it was just a particular hard day, and he had to get in his glove box to get something, and he saw the CD, and he's like, oh, I don't know what this stupid thing is, and he, like, put it in the CD player, and he said he started listening to it, and he instantly felt the Spirit, and it's something that he hadn't felt for so long, and he started listening to it, and he's like, I secretly liked it, and I would never admit it to anybody that I listened to it. So he goes, but every time I was alone in my truck, I would listen to it, and he goes, I listened to it for months and months and months without anybody knowing, and then one day I started listening to the lyrics, and there's this song that made me realize, like, I need to turn my life around. Like, I've got to start really living this, because the way I feel when I listen to this music, that's how I want to feel. And he went to his bishop, cleared up the mistakes that he had made, and he said, I want you to know that I am now reading my scriptures every day and praying, and I just got my mission call. I'm going on a mission. So to me, that's, like, one of the hugest success stories of, you know, what I did and why I do it. And to have experiences like that in your life, you don't have to be a big artist. You don't have to do anything big. You can have that same kind of impact on people's lives through the way you live, through the small things that you do. It doesn't just come, you know, by doing some big thing where you're out in the spotlight. So, all right, any more questions? How much time do we have? I didn't bring my watch, so I don't know. 13 minutes. Okay. Who has some more questions?
7 minutes. Sorry.
7 minutes. All right. We have time for just a little bit more. Yeah. That's okay.
I
I love your homeschool curriculum. I was wondering if you're going to keep going through high school.
Yeah, so I'm kind of going along with my children. So I have, my husband and I had a couple of children and then had a break where we weren't able to have kids, and so we have, and then a group of younger kids. So my oldest boy is 16, and he's actually a junior at BYU. He's kind of crazy. So I haven't been homeschooling him for a while because since he's 13, he's been going to BYU. And so I have a 14-year-old, and she goes to a private school part-time, and then I kind of homeschool her, so I don't have to do a lot of curriculum with them. But with my younger ones, yeah, I was an English major, so picky about that. Couldn't find any, I liked this about this, this about this, this about this. But so I started creating my own, and it was such a massive amount of work that I'm like, I might as well put this out for other people, and it's just kind of grown. But my oldest younger child is in fourth grade this coming year, so we just released the upper elementary. But I am planning on going on, but I would like to do something a little bit different for junior high and high school that's maybe like a online classes or something that's not just like printed materials. But I'm just kind of letting it stew and figuring out. But yeah, we're planning on continue on, but I kind of have to do it as it works with my children and can't release more than one level a year, unfortunately. I wish I could, because people ask me, what do you do for junior high and high school? And I'm like, I kind of do my own thing. I don't have a curriculum I can suggest. But anyway, that answer your question? Yeah. Yeah. White. Yes. Yeah. I like white, and then I like blue and green. Okay. Do you have more questions? Yeah.
What's your favorite song that you've written?
Well, that kind of changes over time. But recently, when it's kind of funny because the song Live Like You Believe is like my most popular song on iTunes. It's the most downloaded over the years. And it's not my favorite song. But people are like, oh, why didn't you sing that song at the fireside? And I'm like, I'm so sick of that song. Or like, it just doesn't, like, for me, I don't know. I'm like, why is that people's favorite song? It's not my favorite song. But I guess that's because we kind of just sat down and we're like, we need to write a song for EFY. They asked us to sing a song. You know, so I think the songs that mean the most to me are songs that I kind of had an experience with. Like, that I wrote because it meant, like, so much to me, you know? So I had an experience once where I almost died, and I was on the freeway and was in the middle lane going, like, 70 miles an hour in my really cool minivan. And my kids weren't with me. Yeah, you're laughing. Minivans are cool. They're really cool. I didn't think that was in your age. No, I don't think it's still, but they're really functional. So I was in the middle lane in my minivan, and there was cars on all sides of me. It was going like 70, and way up in front of me was a truck, this huge truck that had these huge boards that were like this thick. They were like 10 feet long, these huge, I don't know what they were, huge pieces of wood, like big logs, but they were formed anyway. And all of a sudden, without warning, one of those came flying out of the truck. And, I mean, it took like three or four full seconds for it to hit me because it was way up there, but I couldn't stop or anything. It was going 70 miles an hour. It was bouncing long and on long and right towards my car. And I thought it was going to come right through the window and kill me, like I was sure of it. I like saw it, and I just thought, I am dying. And it was amazing at that moment, like what went through my mind. I like could feel how much I wanted to come to this earth, and how long I had prepared for this earth, like for millions of years, right? I prepared for so long and was so excited, and I thought, it's done. Like, I'm turning in the test, my time. I have no more time. I can never do anything through all eternity in this life. Like, this life is done. And I asked myself quickly, I'm like, did I do it? And I knew that I hadn't. I wasn't struggling with any major sins or anything, but I knew that I hadn't been as valiant. I hadn't become the type of person that I meant to be. And I couldn't believe it. I'm like, how could I let the stupid things of this world, like, distract me? How stupid. I was, like, so mad at myself. I was like, oh, please give me more time. Like, if I could just have two more months, I can change so much in 2 months. Like, just let me live a little longer, you know, and I could just feel that. And luckily, instead of coming through my window, it laid down flat. And besides for all the damage that it did to my car and scared me half to death, I was okay. But that just really made me think about, like, wanting to be prepared to meet the Savior and really using that time, and went home and wrote a song called When I See Him. And that song is probably one that means the most to me, because is so heartfelt. Like, when I see him, like, I want to be ready. Like, when I look into those eyes, I don't want to be ashamed type of thing. And so, because I'd had that experience, I think that's why that song means the most to me. So I think we probably have, like, one or two more minutes. Any quick questions that we have? All right, well, let me just close by saying thank you for letting me be here with me. And I think you guys are awesome to be pursuing what you're pursuing and to be here. I just want to encourage you to always, you know, we only have one life to live, and it's the life that you're living right now. And Satan's going to do everything he can to distract you, to make you think it's cool to not learn, it's cool to spend so much time on your phone that you're wasting your life, it's cool to listen to music that's not in keeping with the Spirit. And I just want to encourage you to always remember why you're here. And it's an incredible time you have right now at your age. When you're older, you're going to have a lot more responsibilities than you have right now. It's an opportunity to learn and to grow and take all the extra time that you have to improve yourself, to become better. Focus on improving yourself. Evaluate your life. How can I be a better person? How can I be better? How can I have more charity? How can I serve other people? It's really easy at your age to get really caught up in yourself. Everything's about yourself. And I want to encourage you to look around and be an awesome teenager. Like, my 16-year-old boy comes up to me 5 times a day and says, "Is there anything I can do to help you right now, Mom?" Like, it's amazing. How many 16-year-old boys do you know that do that? He's not perfect. None of my kids are perfect. But, you know, become that kind of person. And that's all I have to say. So thank you for letting me be here.
LDS Home Educators is a nonprofit, all-volunteer organization dedicated to providing inspiration to homeschool families. We hope you enjoyed this recording. If you are interested in listening to more recordings or would like to participate in a future conference, please visit our website at ldshe.org.